everyone, welcome to Press Pause, where we take a short break from our actual play show and do something new, something different, something spontaneous. This is Let's Chat, an interview show where we bring in creatives in the TTRPG space to talk about what they do and why they do it. So today, I am chatting with Lynn Codega, a journalist and co-founder of Rascal News. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, excited to be here to chat Rascal and journalism and news.
Your favorite things.
My favorite things. The only things in my brain right now.
Well, we must begin at the beginning. So I would love to hear kind of where you began your foray into journalism.
Journalism specifically, I was hired about 5 or 6 years ago as a full-time journalist at a magazine, a website magazine called Shots News. Shots.net. That's it. .news.net. It's all just like rattling around in there. Yeah, so Shots.net, which was kind of like Ad Age, Ad Week, that sort of website, a magazine that basically covered marketing and like marketing campaigns. So it was a lot of writing about, you know, activations and short films and commercials and being like, this is like the technical whatever behind this piece, or this is how this came together, or like, this is how this director did this. So it was sort of arts and culture journalism, but through a very, very marketing slant, which is not super conducive to like good investigative journalism. Mostly we were just sort of asked, like, keep it positive, which is fine. Like, a lot of sites sort of say that they're only going to publish nice or good or fun stories. But then it's not really journalism. It's just more marketing. But before that, always been a writer, did some freelance writing now and then, was doing journalistic writing before if it became a full-time journalist. I wrote for Tor.com back when it was Tor.com and not Reactor. Wrote for a couple other places, like a local magazine in the area. And yeah, then I went to IO9 and that was really fun for 2-ish years. And then I was like, you know what? I got laid off, obviously. Or I don't know. I don't know if it's obvious, but
there is a reason you're here now.
There's a reason you're here now. Well, I was laid off from IO9 in kind of a mass restructuring where 24 members of the editorial teams across all of Geo Media and the Geo properties were laid off, including the entire Jezebel team was laid off, shut down, and I was a part of that mass layoff. And I looked at my severance and I was like, what am I going to do with this? I have 3 months. I need to like figure something out. And that's when I, you know, grabbed Rowan and Chase and I was like, do you want to do something crazy? You want to do something weird?
Is IO9 kind of where you started writing about games, or was that kind of just, you fell into that a little bit?
IO9 was where I started writing about games with more consideration and with more specificity. The editor-in-chief of Gizmodo at the time, who is David Ewalt, he basically put a call out on Twitter saying that he wanted a journalist for IO9, and he wanted someone who like could specialize in tabletop. And I was like, That's me. So I got that job because I was so enmeshed in like the tabletop scene, and I understood indie stuff and I understood D&D stuff. And yeah, that is definitely where I started like specializing in D&D and tabletop specific journalism. And before that, I had done a couple pieces, especially on Tor, about like the power of queer play in Dungeons and Dragons and games. I had written a couple pieces for Polygon about games and a piece for Dicebreaker. And there was one more that I did. Oh, I wrote for Immerse Magazine, which was the MIT magazine about games and play, and I wrote about lyric games for them, which was really exciting.
I guess in development of game writing, do you find that you have a specific style of voice that you like to use, or does it kind of depend on the tone of what you're writing about?
Definitely depends on what I'm writing about. For example, I just published a news piece, you know, like 15 minutes ago, and that's very direct. It's very, very, very specific. It's very like, here's a fact, here's a fact, here's a fact. Here is an analysis based on the facts. There's not a lot of voice in there. There's like some structure that kind of like hints towards like, and you know, Linda wrote this because they put in like way too many ellipses kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, but a lot of like the other pieces that I do, the ones that are like more opinion based or review or like reviews or critique or just like me talking about a game that I like, those definitely have more of a jocular tone where I'm just sort of like joking. I'm like in on the joke with you guys, as you're reading. And then interview pieces are definitely like, I want to emphasize that this is like a conversation as much as possible. So that's a slightly different tone, same voice, different tone. And then there are some like really silly blogs, like the one I did about the Aloha shirt that D&D.
Yeah.
It's so rad. It's like that shirt rips and I fucking hate it. It's so annoying. But that's the kind of piece where I'm like, this has to be a voicey piece or else like there's no point to it. Like no one's going to want to read about how much I hate that D&D is, you know, making a shirt that's $120 unless like I'm the butt of the joke. Like yeah. I'm the joke in that piece. It's D&D is doing
because what you want the shirt a little bit.
I want the shirt a lot. And it's like, that's the thing, like D&D is going to do what D&D is going to do, and they're a company and they're going to pursue these licensing deals, and there's nothing like wrong or bad or like even unique about that. But if I make it so that like, oh yeah, we're writing about this because I'm the joke, I'm the punchline, that it's actually something like worth reading and worth writing about.
It also came out of nowhere a little bit. Just all of a sudden that shirt existed.
Or at least that's the way it felt. It's so silly. And it was one of those things of like D&D was literally like this close to forcing me to wear their branding on my body. And they really fumbled the bag there.
Where did your exploration of these types of games begin? Like just TTRPGs?
Yeah, so definitely I got my start with role-playing on Play by Post forums when I was younger. I think, 10 or 11 when I started doing play-by-post forums. And, you know, fan fiction is also like a form of play, and I really want to write a blog about it. But yeah, that's sort of how it got started. It was definitely like fan fiction and like play-by-post on forums.
I never even considered fan fiction to be like in that realm, but I guess, it kind of is.
I have so many thoughts about this.
Would love to read the blog post when you finish it. Would love to see that up.
April, probably. I'm like, I have my calendar over to my left. That's what I'm pointing at here. I'm like so busy this week and next week. But so April's probably when that blog will come out.
Do you have a kind of a favorite game or style of TTRPG that you are drawn to?
I really love narrative and story game RPGs. I find those to be the most fun to read and fun to play. But I also like, I do love a dungeon crawl. Like I'm really non-exclusive in the games that I play. One of my favorite games is Hearts Blazing, which is sort of this old game that was published, not old, but like it was published in like 2016. And it went out of print in 2020, and I'm just like, this is a perfect game. Why did this happen?
Why did it leave the stores? Why did it leave the shelves?
I know. So I'm writing a blog about that too. But that's like that's one of my favorites because it's very story forward, but it has like just enough railroads to guide people to play it. It's about like sci-fi melodrama. It's sort of in the style of Firefly, Battlestar Galactica, you know, Star Wars, literally anything where it's like you are doing dramatic shit in space.
Space operas,
mecha anime, shit like that. So that's probably my favorite game just because it's so easy to play, and I have introduced it to like so many of my friends who love it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that those sorts of games are really great. I also really love The King is Dead by Vincent and Megway Breaker.
Okay, I don't think I've heard of that one.
It is a... How do I describe this game? It uses, like, discrete card games within, like, so mini games within a larger framework of, like, the king has died and you are all scions of royal houses and you're trying to, like, compete to become the next king. So, but, like, also very dramatic, very over the top.
Oh, like, I'm sure.
It's wonderful. But that's another game I really like because it has, like, these discrete or, like, these very specific guardrails, but is also just, like, and you can do whatever you want. But, you know, I also love... OSR style games. I really love Into the Odd. I think that's one of my favorite games where it's just like, you are a weirdo and you are looking for weird shit underground. And I'm like, perfect. You know, I love Blades in the Dark. I love a lot of the Power by the Apocalypse games. I like Masks, Monster of the Week. A lot of Forged in the Dark games are great. Yeah, so I don't know. I have a lot of games that I really love.
It's also like a wild question to ask because there are hundreds of games out. Yeah. And they're all fairly different, so it's a tough question to ask. In the world of reporting and talking about these games that you love, is there kind of like something, like a line of interest that you have? Like, are you interested in reporting on game designs? Are you interested in reporting on AP? Are you interested in breaking news? Like we recently very briefly discussed before we started chatting.
Yeah. I really love breaking news. I think it's just so fun when you find like a string and you're like, where does this go actually? So breaking news and investigations, I think, are the things that I really, really like. But I also really like, you know, shooting the shit and writing about the Aloha shirt.
The Aloha shirt.
I love a blog. I love a blog.
We're two ends of the spectrum here. We got breaking news and we got tongue-in-cheek blogs.
I love a blog. Can't help myself. So I really like the way that, I really like looking at the way that games intersect with culture. Whether that's through investigative breaking news, or that's through reviews and critique, or that's through interviewing people about how their game design has been affected by like community culture, you know, their own personal understandings of the world. So I think that's where I kind of fall with like, what are you interested in? It's really the intersections where games and culture crossover and how they intersect.
You've probably been asked this question 100 times, but since our podcast is separated from D&D on purpose, I'm not sure our listeners would know this about you, and I was wondering if you would be willing to give a little rundown on your breaking news of last year.
Yeah,
which was the D&D OGL license news.
Yes. Yes, my... it will haunt me forever. Uh-huh. I'm just like, I have done so much trying to distance myself from reporting on every little thing that Dungeons & Dragons does. And then, of course, like, the thing that kind of broke me out of the mainstream is Dungeons & Dragons. Just like, of course. Oh, karma. Works in very, very funny ways. So last year in January, Dungeons and Dragons, I received a copy of the new open gaming license that Dungeons and Dragons was planning to implement for both 5e and the new edition that's coming out next year. The open gaming license had been established in the year 2000, and it allowed people to make third-party content. And people were allowed to make third-party content using the systems reference document that was attached to the open gaming license, which included like stat blocks, classes, races, feats, weapons, and like the basic rules of D&D were basically given to people using this open gaming license, and people were allowed to basically take that and do whatever they wanted with it, you know? There wasn't really a lot of restrictions. They didn't have to ask D&D's permission. They didn't have to pay D&D. They didn't have to pay a royalty fee. It was very much like an open source document for the community. And then in 2023, in January, I got a copy of the new open gaming license, which was bad.
Yes, it was.
Very bad. It required royalties. It required reporting. It required a lot of things that people had enjoyed with the original OGL. So I got a leaked copy of that, and I was the first reporter to break that news. And I sort of became the journalist of record for that news story as it made its way through like the next month, basically. So within like 4 weeks, Dungeons and Dragons had apologized and then tried to come out with an OGL 1.2 and then tried to come out with like an OGL 1.3 and then finally was like, actually Creative Commons. Like, we've heard enough. Like, don't get mad at us. The systems reference document is now in the Creative Commons. We can't touch it. You can go forth. So yeah, I broke a lot of those stories.
And you'd mentioned it kind of brought you out of the brought you into the mainstream or past it, at least, like in the sense of your career trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still feel like it's following you, or do you feel like it was kind of like a massive blip that happened and then you've been able to like move on, or has it kind of dragged you a bit?
I think it's just a blip. It's one of those things I'm like, that's never gonna happen again. Thank God.
I don't have to deal with all of this anymore.
Right. So it's one of those things, like, I'm definitely glad that I was able to do that. I'm glad that I did that reporting. I'm proud of the work that I did. I'm glad that I will probably never have to do something like that again. It was a rush, but it was also just like exhausting. And it's definitely like brought me a lot of attention that I'm grateful for, and also just like a little wary and unsure of, because I did not necessarily get into journalism to be like recognized at bars at conventions. Yeah. God, it's just like,
oh no.
It's wild. It's not what I was aiming for. It's one of those things where it's just like, you know, everyone loves attention. People like attention. Attention feels good. It's why we all have Twitters. Like,
yeah,
we are all like dummies who are just like, give me more likes.
Yeah.
So there is that, where we just like all have to step back and recognize, like, we would not be on Twitter if we did not want someone to notice us. But it's also one of those things where it's just like, gross.
did you find that it was like exacerbated too by like what I feel like is the current downfall of social media? Like, was the, like, instead of just like being able to like release this article and it be somewhere, it was, you know, the TTRPG community on Twitter is pretty big. Mm-hmm. So do you think like that easy access kind of exacerbated the whole fiasco? Or
I think it did. When I do these sorts of reporting, I did leverage social media, not only for this report, but for like other reports too, where I would like do this outline and it would get shared pretty widely. So I was using social media to my advantage for that period of time. And I think it did help the spread, but it was also, it just got picked up by everyone. You know, YouTubers talked about it. I was on NPR twice to talk about it. Washington Post talked about it, Forbes, The Guardian. Like, it was one of those stories that broke containment in a way that felt a lot bigger than more or less anything else, because it was sort of like that weird niche industry business journalism combined with like Nerds Are Mad online journalism. And I'm like, yeah. Perfect. This is it. This is exactly where I want to be.
This is the thing, though, that needs a wider audience. The nerds are mad.
Us nerds. We just get mad at anything.
Everything and anything.
No standards anymore.
Sign me up.
So yeah, it was definitely part of... Yeah, just part of everything.
You've left that a year in the past, and now we are here with this awesome new... pursuit. Rascal News, which I have clicked and subscribed, and we support independent journalism in this house.
Yes.
It's super fun, super exciting. I've met Rowan before. We've had some conversation, but it's you and Rowan Zioli and Chase Carter are the three co-founders. So in your own words, what is Rascal?
Rascal is an independent, worker-owned, reader-supported news site for tabletop role-playing games. We describe ourselves as alternative, independent, and roguelike. But yeah, it's mostly just the three of us, and we really want to be able to bring on contributors soon to not only like take some pressure off of us, but also to like diversify our writing. And yeah, we are just three weirdos who have been writing for years and have sort of been watching the downfall of journalism as an industry. Especially earlier this year, it was so bleak. Sports Illustrated, LA Times, Washington Post, like layoffs across the board, like The Messenger shuttering, like Pitchfork. It was just wild. It felt like every single day there was like a new shutdown, a new closure, a new layoff. And that part of the year when we were still like building Rascal, we were watching all this happen. We were just really resolved that like we need to go independent or we will never be able to like make a living in this industry.
Well, I guess I'm glad, because that was kind of going to be my question, was how did it feel in the middle of all that trying this new venture? But it seems like, well, it's still, I'm sure it's still stressful because it is new and you can't predict the future. It sounds like you all feel fairly confident that this was the right move, at least.
The mists roll across the valley over the bodies of hundreds of dead. As a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal.
Enter Pocket Bard, immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so, so, so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
Hi, I'm Maia, and this is Maia's Game Room, a narrative actual play anthology featuring short-form, story-driven TTRPGs. Each season tells a new story using a different rules-light system brought to life with sound design, editing, and emotional-rich roleplay. So, if you love cinematic storytelling and character-driven drama, come check out Season 1, set in the haunting world of the Electric State RPG. Just search Maia's Game Room wherever you get your podcasts.
We all sort of figured that we had to try. And we sort of decided, even if we only try for a year, it's still worth doing for that year. So yeah, that's kind of what we were thinking. But yeah, it's just one of those weird quirks of an industry that's just like not built to support the people who are actually working in it anymore. And you know, it's an industry that's been bought up by billionaires and millionaires and venture capitalists, and that's just journalism is not supposed to play nice with venture capitalism.
Yeah.
So journalism is not like a number go up business. So yeah, it was one of those things where like we are definitely like a little like always kind of like slightly nervous, terrified, scared, but also like really hopeful, and like the response has been great and we are really excited and we are so happy that we have a chance to not only like do some really amazing interviews, like Rowan's been doing some great interviews and Chase has been doing some really good insightful analytical blogs on, you know, how companies think about their products. So not only do we get to do all that, but we also get to write about something that we really love and be fun and have a good time while managing the stress of emailing the Saudi government asking for a comment.
I'm gonna read that article once I get off this with you. Did they respond?
No, God, I hope they lost my email. We asked them about a comment for an earlier article. Luckily, we didn't have to really ask them for a comment on this one.
Oh,
but
okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Terrifying.
Oh, was that the article? That was the article about them being at conventions?
At PAX, gotcha. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Did not expect to like suddenly become a like pseudo expert on where all the money in Saudi esports is going, and all of a sudden I just have like this murder wall where it's like just a bunch of red string everywhere. I'm like, wait, Stumble Guys is owned by Scopely, which was bought out by Savvy, which failed Embracer Group, which is like the PIF. Like, just insane.
It's the Charlie Day from Sunny meme.
That's literally, I like, they're my form of like, my slight form of autism is such that as soon as like one thing gets pinged in my brain, it just like sets off all of these like little spider webs, like a cracking mirror. And I like, just, that's just how it works for me, where I'm just like, oh, ding, 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 ding. It's like a weird little pinball. And then I end up with a blog about how, you know, Hasbro's cozy with the PIF.
You fall down a little rabbit hole, and at the bottom there's a treasure, and then you got to climb your way back out.
A little treasure. A little treat.
A little treat at the bottom of the hole.
A little treat.
How did you specifically, you, Rowan, and Chase kind of group up for this? Like, what was the origins of that?
Well, there are very few journalists who cover tabletop games. And there's just not a lot of us. And there are very few journalists who would be willing to give up or willing to invest the time needed to build a startup outlet. And Rowan and I had been in each other's orbit for a while. And I know that she did really great work with covering actual play podcasts. And I know she also did like a citizen journalist investigation into Vyvanse and ADHD medication. So I knew that she could at the very least like do some of that. And I'm like, we need, and another big part of it was when I first approached Rowan and I was like, okay, you're underemployed. You're writing for the Fundamentals, which does not pay any money. What if you wrote for like a site that we could build together that we would be able to like actually pay ourselves. So that was pretty easy to convince her to do it. But yeah, and then I have known Chase for a couple years. We've played a couple games together. We've met up at conventions. Just because the nature of this industry is such that, especially like tabletop and then tabletop journalism, is so small that like friends with everyone, DM everyone, you know, like we all talk to each other all the time. So I know Chase has sort of been a little frustrated by Dicebreaker, just because Dicebreaker was also part of the Read Pop announcement. They were like selling off that property, and I was like, okay, now's my chance to poach Chase.
Let me grab him.
Yeah, I was like, I'm like, my time is now. Like, now or never. And Chase, I just think, is really a brilliant writer and understands the industry and is really well known. So it's like, okay, Rowan, relative unknown, but a Gen Z e-girl who knows how to do TikTok and also covers actual plays. And I'm just like, perfect. So I knew that like I wanted to ask someone who covered actual plays and enjoyed it, because it's a part of this industry that is like so deeply underreported and so deeply underappreciated. And I was like, Rowan. So I brought Rowan on, and then I brought Chase on, and then we all wanted to be co-founders, and we were all just like, you know, I felt very uncomfortable with hierarchy in general. And I felt very uncomfortable taking on any kind of formal leadership role. So we're constantly working towards a more anti-hierarchical and like anarchist style of working together. We all get paid the same. We all are co-founders and writers. Like, none of us are editors. We're not, like, how ridiculous would it be if I was like editor in chief? Absurd. Absolutely absurd. Like, unthinkable. So we really work towards this kind of horizontal. I'm just like, no, wait,
vertical is horizontal.
Yeah. Horizontal structure where we are working together to create something rather than working for each other. So we're really trying to pursue this as a very equitable and complete project. Not complete. What's the word I'm looking for? Where it's just like we're all together.
Community? Communal? Yeah.
Communal is closer. I don't think three people is a community if we're working towards a capitalistic end. But you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
Partnership. A partnership. Like a very equal partnership. So that's sort of how it came together. I will fully admit that I kind of got everything started, but it was an absolutely like a three-person group effort to get Rascal up and going.
You know the name and the whole design, I think, is pretty eye-catching.
Yeah.
What was the impetus for the style that you guys ended up on?
Well, I'll fully admit that Rascal was my idea. The name was my idea, because it's kind of an in-joke where there's someone once called me like a truth teller and a little bit of a rascal, and I was just like, I love that so much. I love that. So you know, the more we thought about it, Rascal sort of really made sense. We played around with doing something like Knucklebone, being like Knucklebone magazine, but Rascal was just fun to say, and it's just like, it really speaks to the kind of indie punk scene that's like kind of underneath a lot of gaming, and where journalists aren't necessarily here to be people's friends, and we aren't necessarily here to be people's like secondary marketers. So we're just like, we're rascals. Like, you can't actually like be nice with us. We will be mean to you. Like, that's part of the deal of being a journalist. Like, we are not here to be kind. Like, we should be kind because we're people, but, like, we're journalists and it's our job to, like, investigate the structures and the powers and the community and, like, tear it apart. Like, we're not here to be your friend. We're here to be your friendly neighborhood bartender.
Hey, is anyone else out there obsessed with dice? Does anyone out there want to join the I Have Too Many Dice Sets for My Own Good Club? Or is this going to be a party of one? Because I would be the first to tell you that I have a dice problem. But I don't necessarily think that's the worst problem to have. So if you've got the same mindset, Queer PG has a fun little offer for you. If you head over to fanrolldice.com, you can use our code QueerPG10 at checkout to get 10% off your purchase. They've got gemstone dice, my personal favorite. They've got wooden dice, they've got metal dice, and a whole bunch of other designs and accessories to fit all of your dice gremlin needs. So, if you find you're itching for something new to add to your collection, head on over to fanrolldice.com and remember, QueerPG10, that's QueerPG10 at checkout to get 10% off. Have fun rolling! You had mentioned at the top the thing about, like, writing from everything having to be a positive viewpoint on something, right. And now you kind of have the freedom to, like, actually critique something.
Yeah, so, I mean, IO9 was also very much, like, you can critique. You can be mad. You can be fixed on your point. You don't have to be happy all the time. But, yeah, there are some magazines out there that will only run good, like, feel-good stories. That's why we got Rascal. And then we hired Johan Noor, who does Morkborg and, like, all of that design. And I really love his stuff. And we sort of went to him and we were just like, we want legacy media with a punk edge. And we were inspired by not only nameplates from legacy newspapers, like, you know, the Washington Post, New York Times, but also by like the kind of funny medieval style OSR Dungeons and Dragons magazines from like the 80s. So we like sent him Wizardry, the cover for Wizardry, and we're like, we like this. And we sent him like Talis Lanta, and we sent him like a bunch of these designs. And then we also sent him like punk posters and, you know, concerts. And we're just like, here is the vibe. What do you think? And he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, the result is really good.
Yeah, it's great. It's
really good.
The three of us are going to Gen Con, so we're probably going to make ourselves shirts or something.
Mm, yeah, I think you should.
We'll have to figure it out.
You know, we've talked a little bit. You mentioned some other outlets, Dicebreaker, IO9. I guess, what is it that sets Rascal apart from those gaming reporting sites?
I think focus is a big thing. The three of us are just directly focused on tabletop role-playing games, and I think that's important. We're also ad-free, and we do not have any ties to any other organization. It's three journalists who are running the show. Another thing that sets us apart, I think, is the fact that we are able to go off on these sorts of tangents and just be like, wait a second, I have... like, something's clicking in my head. Everyone be quiet. An autist is at work. And we're able to, like, pursue those stories. We don't need to deal with... One of the big things that happens when you're at those larger sites is that clicks and audience numbers are analyzed and deeply important and, like, used to determine the work that is published. So we were just, like... We're not fuck SEO, first of all. We are not dealing with it. We are not trying to work with it. It's broken, and that's not how we're going to make our money, and that's not how we're going to find our audience. So fuck SEO, and also fuck keywords. And we decided that we would write good work without being constrained by the ongoing and shitification of the internet. And I think that's the biggest differentiator, is that we have sort of decided, like, we're not going to publish a dozen stories a day. We're not even going to publish like four or five stories a day. We're going to publish like one or two really good stories, and that's it.
Quality over quantity, as they say.
Mm-hmm. And we do have like our announcement section, which is like, here is just press releases. We will publish your press release. It is not journalism. Mm-hmm. And it like, it's in the announcement section and we are happy to have it there. But we are not going to be rewriting press releases.
I think that is a super cool thing though to have on the site, because yeah. I think it helps build community and it helps people who, not even if they're creators or people who like want to make content in this place, but just people who are like super interested in gaming to find new games that are going to be on Kickstarter or to find new APs to watch. I think it's a really cool thing to have. And I also think you guys not rewriting these announcements also helps people develop their own marketing skills. And, you know, they have to figure out what is going to be attractive to people who are coming on that announcements page, because there are a lot of announcements on that announcements page. So.
Yeah. We have published at once, I think at most like 6 or 7 announcements in one day.
Mm-hmm.
We try and spread it out and we usually get like 2 or 3 every day, which honestly great.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're really happy with the announcements. We've sort of put that in the hands of the community and we're just like, we will just make sure we'll like read through. We'll make sure that there's nothing like deeply offensive here and we'll press go.
That's nice.
That's it.
It's like a forum of sorts. Off to the side of Rascal.
Yeah, we think that it was really important to have that set up during our soft launch, like during launch, because we knew that it would be, Rascal's just sort of like a hard sell just in general, where we're just like, yeah, it's like 3 journalists who will only write about tabletop role-playing games, and you're just like, what?
Hey, sometimes being more specific is for the best.
Yeah, when my mother was really like struggling to tell people what I was doing. And so I was like, Mom, here we go. Look, just, this is what you got to say. Linda has co-founded a niche arts and culture magazine.
Look at that.
So easy peasy.
You don't have to explain the acronym to people. You don't have to do anything.
Nope. Nice. Just, and like, you know, even simpler. Oh yeah. I'm a journalist for an arts and culture magazine.
Yeah.
Easy peasy, outlet, whatever, newspaper, doesn't
matter.
Whatever
you want to call it, Mom.
Whatever you want to call it, but I just like go for like arts and culture.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Easy peasy. And then you don't have to explain to people, yeah, I focus on this niche of a niche of a niche.
Yeah, the smallest, you know, you see the small community, but we're like, we're right here on this.
Yeah.
Map.
You see gaming, this $1 trillion community, we're over here. Yeah. We're nowhere near that, but we're also near it.
Yeah. on your website, you're really transparent. You have, you know, a full, you have, you know, stuff about you guys, mm-hmm. you have stuff about what you want for Rascal, and then you have what is a really, I think, detailed and lengthy code of ethics, which I love to see. And not that I don't trust you to stick to your code of ethics, but I was wondering if having such clear ideals of being factual and transparent, are there any worries that you as journalists are not going to be able to get into certain spaces?
Can you give me an example of what you mean?
We talked about like not being afraid to outwardly critique something. Are you afraid that a company or a game maker is going to be like, you can no longer cover my...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Loss of access is something that, like, I've experienced directly as a result of my reporting. And it's something that I'm, like, intimately familiar with. And it's one of those things, like, if a company decides not to give me access to the work that I am, like, the work that I am working on and, like, the stuff that I am writing about, that says a lot more about them than it does me. And I'm like, I don't need any company. I don't need any one company to like me or give me access. It would be nice. I would like to have access. I don't know, man. It's absolutely a concern, but it's never so much of a concern that I will like not publish a story. I think that there's, again, this sort of goes back to the fact that, like, I'm not anyone's friend. I'm, like, the friendly neighborhood bartender. And I don't know. They don't want to show up at the bar. That's fine.
And I guess, like, you not necessarily getting access into breaking news doesn't mean you can't report on other parts of, you know, whatever's happening.
Say I don't get the games ahead of time for review. That's fine. There are other games to review, and if they don't want me to review their game, then I don't have to.
Yeah.
No one's making me do anything. And again, we are not going for SEO, which is one of the reasons why people mostly like would review, would try to get those reviews out at embargo. Mm-hmm. And we are focusing on doing good work as much as possible. So,
which I guess is a comment you had made on your Twitter somewhere when the Daggerheart thing came out, and just being like, no one got this, or no one had time yet to do this, and now all of a sudden everybody has it. It felt a little weird.
Yeah, because like we got the charge in, like the very specific character generation, about 2 or 3 weeks before the embargo was up. So we had time. We didn't rush it. We literally spent like 2.5 hours going through character generation, talking about the inspirations, discussing our characters, discussing Daggerheart. And then we wrote a blog about it. And like, we didn't have to rush any of that. We did it. And then to sort of like publish that and realize like we were the only critical outlet that was able to like get that material ahead of time, write about it, and publish it at the embargo date was just really weird for me. Because I'm like, this shouldn't be as exceptional as it is. Like, Polygon should have done this. Comic Book should have done this. All of these places, like, should have had the ability to do it. And it really felt like they just did not have the access, did not have the time, were not given the ability to write what they wanted to write or write about something, like, really big for whatever reason. And it just felt so weird. I was like, this is a huge deal. Why were we the only ones to get access, to have time, and to be able to give the critical feedback that like this game deserves as like a piece of art in this burgeoning art form? It was so weird to me. I was like, man, shouldn't be this special. Like, Rascal should not be this special. It's because it's not special. It's like a news item. It was just bonkers.
Yeah, no, I totally got where you come from. It was odd that no one else did it. And, you know, we probably have all of our own theories about maybe why things were not done. But, you know, can't prove it. Can't just, I'll mull on that silently.
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of it is the fact that, like, Critical Role is slowly getting better at doing press relations and press management. Yeah, they're just getting better at it, but they're still like a little rough in places.
It's been now a month and a half since you guys released it. A month?
Oh yeah, just about. Tomorrow will be a month.
Tomorrow's a month. Mm-hmm. How's the first month been?
Just a high-pitched scream. Yeah, it's been great. It's been so stressful, but it's been really wonderful. We've had a really great reception. We feel really confident about the work we're doing. We've gotten great feedback. Like, genuinely, I did not allow myself to have ambitions with Rascal when we first published, because I was like, if I don't have a number in my head, I won't be disappointed. If I don't think about it, I won't be hurt.
I guess you kind of did just answer that by saying you didn't have any numbers, but like, do you feel like what you hoped for it to be, I mean, of course it's only been a month, but like, do you feel like it's kind of met some sort of like, oh, this is going how I had hoped it to go?
Yeah. So we have some numbers about like, okay, we need to make this much money for us to be able to do this for a year. And we need to be able to make this much money for us to do this sustainably for longer than a year. And we are making really, really strong strides towards this is what we are going to, like, we might reach that sort of like, this is how much money we need to make in 1 year mark this year. Like, I think that it's doable. And it's one of those things, like, Rowan lives very cheaply. You know, she lives in a very small apartment in New York City on like dimes, and I'm like, yikes, could not be me. But and I like have savings, and I had severance, and I have another source of income that is helping me out. And of course, Chase works for Dicebreaker. So right now, like, none of us are doing this, except for Rowan, bless her, is doing this like as our like straight up full time only job. And we want to get to the point where we are, this is our full time only job for all of us.
You know, that's such like a base level necessity.
I know.
Is that your job, the thing you're doing is sustaining you.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, it's one of those things where we were talking about it and we were just like, man, it's wild how our wildest dream is to pay rent.
Yeah.
Journalism.
Sign of the times.
Hey.
Well, you know, those are your hopes for now. Are there any like what are you hoping for, I suppose, for Rascal in a long term? I know you're thinking fairly short term and like as of a year, but you know.
The big one is getting a contributor program set up and getting freelancers to write for us and figuring out a way to do that equitably and fairly, and figuring out a way to do that that doesn't necessarily mirror the ways that freelancers have been used by outlets in the past. We are really inspired by the Dropout profit share model. We're really inspired by the defector model. There's just a lot of ways that we are looking into pushing back against the systems that have exploited us and trying to find new ways and new systems to create a group of freelancers that feel like they are invested in Rascal specifically because they are writing for Rascal, not necessarily because they are getting paid by Rascal. Like, we want to pay them. Like, that's obvious. Like, we want to give them money, but we want to be able to give them money and be able to develop this sort of holacracy of freelancers and networks where they feel like they have a say in what Rascal does. So trying to figure out that structure as well as like getting money to pay them is what I'm really
looking forward to. The philosophy of the structure will probably be actually easier than the funding part of that.
Right. And one of the ways that we're looking into funding it is by, we want to create a fellowship program where people will be able to like donate directly to the fellowship program. And we will take, like, for example, if someone donates $1,000 to the fellowship program, Rascal takes $200, and then $800 goes to the freelancer. So we are trying to figure out a way to develop that more clearly, more specifically, and like find people who are willing to be like, yes, I want to give you $1,000 for a fellowship for a marginalized author or for a journalist of color or for like someone who is specifically covering disability issues or native issues or whatever, and figuring out ways to use our fellowship program to diversify our work.
And I'm gonna make an assumption based off of our conversation so far, but that would not be like a game company giving you $1,000 for this one journalist to write about their game, or would it?
No. So we would be open. Like, let's say, you know, Chaosium gives us $1,000. We would take $200 and we would tell Chaosium, thanks. Like, we will hire a Chaosium fellow. They will be called a Chaosium fellow, and you have the pride of knowing that you funded this Chaosium fellow. And then the freelancer would do whatever they wanted.
Gotcha. Incredible.
Yeah. And you know, at the bottom of the article, it'd just be like, this article made possible through a generous donation from Chaosium, and just being like, we are really clear about where we got this money. We're really clear about where it's going. Everyone knows what the, where the money, like, we have followed the money, and we are telling people exactly where the money came from, where it's going, and how much is like happening here. So yeah, it would be very much like, congratulations on funding a Chaosium fellow. We'll tell you what they write about.
Transparency. That's what it all comes down to.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, the key to a lot of those, to the like long ethics and standards that we wrote. It's just like a lot of it's just like being really clear about lots of stuff, how things work, more or less.
Well, we're coming to the end here, and I want to thank you for giving us some of your time in this busy weeks you've had.
Oh my gosh. Of course. You're so welcome.
One last thing. How can listeners of our podcast, Queer PG, support you and support Rascal?
So the best way to support me and support Rascal is to sign up for rascal.news. We have a free subscriber tier, which gives you access to a lot of public articles. I think about a dozen so far, and a lot of them are breaking news articles we've sort of make free to the public. So subscribing at the free tier is so, so beneficial and so helpful. We really appreciate it. And if you can give us money, we would love that. But obviously, we are working to make Rascal accessible, which is why we have that free tier. So yeah, subscribe to Rascal. That's the best way to do it. Also follow Rascal on social media. We are Rascal_news, just about everywhere. Twitter, TikTok, Blue Sky. We're there. So give us a follow. That would be really helpful. And if you want to, you know, keep track of whatever nonsense I'm up to, I am mostly found at Lynn Codega on Twitter.
Awesome. And everyone listening can find Queer PG on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, TikTok, and yes, even Tumblr, if you can believe it. Check us out, listen to our other interviews, listen to our shows, give us a review, go on our Patreon so you can hang out in our Discord with everybody. But as Lynn said, head over to Rascal and sign up. They have a ton of great articles that you can peruse, and I have found a new show. I have purchased a new game. I have a new book just because of the articles I've read over there. It's so crazy. That's so insane. Definitely make sure you go and do that. And again, thank you, Lynn, so much for coming on.
Of course.
And for everybody else, until next time.